Hey, this is Mateo Lane.
I'm Emma Willman.
And this is Inside the Closet.
Inside the Closet.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of Inside the Closet with Mateo Lane and Emma Willman. I always notice when I say that, or both of us, we're always like, hey everybody, welcome back.
You're right.
Okay. Hey, how's it going?
There we go.
Yeah, we're always like rushing through it as quickly as possible.
Well, we don't want to miss anything, any of the important info. Welcome to the show, guys. Thank you so much for being here. We appreciate you. We appreciate your time. And we're closing in. It's going to be like mid-December by the time this is in your ears.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Do you have any New Year's resolutions?
Christmas time is here.
And Hanukkah.
I don't have any. No.
This year, I don't either because I've realized that a resolution for a whole year for me is not sustainable. But maybe this week, I'll try, as always, to drink more frickin' water.
Well, today we have Rachel Feinstein on, so we're going to call her right now.
Comedian, actress.
Very funny comedian. Probably the best wordsmith of all comics that I know.
Wow, that is a high honor. She's a regular at the Comedy Studio. She's been on Showtime, Comedy Central, Netflix.
Yeah, she's pretty amazing. Hey, Rachel.
Yes.
How are you?
Good. How are you, my love?
Good.
welcome to Inside the Closet.
Yes, your first time. Me and Emma Willman are here. This is Inside the Closet, and we're here with Rachel Feinstein.
And we just did an intro with all your credits.
Okay, listen. I'm ready to get puss nasty, and there's nothing that's off limits. But can I call you in 1 minute when I get upstairs on the elevator?
Yeah, absolutely. Of course. Please.
Okay. All right. Okay, it might be 2 minutes.
That's take your time.
Okay, cool. So I'm going to run upstairs, and then let's just say we're going to pull back the curtain.
Let's do it.
Cool. Perfect. Okay, great.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Puss nasty.
I'll tell her this, too. Rachel Feinstein is so funny. She is so descriptive. Like, if you really watch her act, she is so descriptive in all of her jokes and the words she uses. I mean, she uses adjectives to really highlight the joke, but in ways that you wouldn't expect. Like, you'll hear it today, I'm sure. Like, when she discusses something, she immediately explains it in a way that is very unique to her.
Mm.
And I think she's great.
She's got, yeah, that is a good way to describe her vocabulary. Absolutely. 100%. Yeah, she's got like some, and sometimes she'll use like old timey words where I'm like, I haven't even heard that in a modern context.
Yeah.
And like, and ever.
And the thing I like about her too is like, she's so fucking beautiful.
Very pretty.
And I think a lot of times, like, you look at people and people always judge comics based off how they look, right? Mm-hmm. And so you look at her, you're like, oh my God, look at this beautiful woman. And then all of a sudden you realize like, this woman is the most comic comedian human being on the face of the planet. Like, I love hanging with her. She's so funny. She's so nice. She's so talented. She's one of my favorite comics, I think.
I think people judge people on how they look all the time, but then it's just like whatever.
Well, because I get that.
Right.
Like,
totally.
People don't know my act. They look at me and they're like, well, obviously you're not funny or you're not a comedian or whatever.
That's what you think they're thinking?
I've been told that.
Wow. Because I mean, but I mean, people are always like, whether you're a comedian or not, like, people are always like, sizing up, like, what the fuck, what's this person gonna be about?
Right. No one looks at anyone and says, oh, are they gonna be a good singer?
Right.
You know, but if you're a comedian, it's like they almost expect you to be holding up a rubber chicken.
Right.
And it's
right,
like,
right.
Well, why aren't you in suspenders with a rubber chicken?
100%.
And ridiculous. Why aren't you Paula Poundstone from 1986?
There was this guy, he was probably like 65, his name was Edgar. And I was walking down the street and he knew a friend of mine and we walked maybe 2 blocks. So I didn't say anything because they were catching up. And then Edgar said, what do you do? And I was like, I work in entertainment. And my friend was like, oh, she's a comedian. And he was dead serious. He's like, you don't seem very funny. And I was like, what? I was like, I've been walking and nodding. I was like, I don't know what the expectation there was, motherfucker. And I was like, yeah. And then he was kind of like, huh. And I was like, all right, you know.
Well, I went on a date the other day. He didn't laugh once. And then he goes, you were much funnier than I thought.
He said you were more funny than you thought?
Yeah. And I was like, you didn't even laugh.
Right.
What are you talking about?
How bad did you think I was?
You like, laughed
he's
once.
Like, based off of your comedy I've seen, and you were much funnier than I thought you'd be. You're like, God.
Yeah, that's the other
damn.
Thing, too, is like, I hate the, like, well, you better make me laugh, or are you going to make me laugh? I'm like, well, I don't care if I make you laugh. I'm getting paid by the hundreds of other people that I make laugh. I don't care about you.
All 10 of them have a real contention with that, thinking you're getting it for free, those two people.
Those sons of bitches. Yeah. Those two nods. Those pet
Someone said
man,
that
huh?
To you after a date? They must have meant it as a compliment, you know, like backhanded.
I think
way.
They were trying to, but they don't, like, yeah. There should be, like, a class. Like, if you're going to date a comedian, Here's
there should
how
be that for everybody. Like, or for everybody.
Yeah, I'm but sure... I'm selfish. I want just
right.
comedians.
Because it's like, if we were going to, it'd be like how to talk to fucking, I wouldn't even know 98. I feel like everyone in every industry
but it's common
thinks that.
We're good at asking the right questions. Do you see what I'm saying? You go on a date with someone new. We know how to entertain.
Sure.
I know how to include you. And I'm a great first date.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a terrible fifth month dater.
Sure.
But great first dater.
Yes. Yes, that's true. We could do a class on doing great first 1 month, 1 to 5 months, and then someone who's good at 6 to 2 years could pick it up and be like,
someone
and then here's how you're honest.
Yeah, someone needs to teach me how to date.
Lexi's, my girlfriend's really good at it.
Yeah, I should chit-chat with her about it.
She's very good at, like, honesty. She said that when she was in Chicago, she would go on dates all the time just to, like, figure out what she wanted in someone.
I just don't know how to set up that. I don't even have time for myself. All I can think about is, like, I don't even have 5 minutes to play Fortnite.
Right.
That's all I want
to
do.
Are you still getting to play Fortnite regularly?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have to squeeze it in. It is so fun.
Now so many people, like, post clips of it that I'm like, this does look pretty fun.
It's really, really fun.
Have you ever played with comedian Rocky Hale Davis? He posted some clips of it.
I have not. I didn't know Rocky played Fortnite.
I don't know if it was Fortnite, but it was some game.
He feels like, I feel like he's a Call of Duty player.
Could be.
Like a Warzone player.
What are the differences?
Warzone looks like you're in a war.
That sounds awful.
Fortnite, you're like a character from the third point of view, building boxes and like, it's colorful.
Yes.
A Pixar movie.
What about, what's that one where you're like always in a car?
Mario.
There's Mario.
GTA.
What was?
Grand Theft Auto.
Grand Theft Auto. That's the one I'm thinking of. That's the one my brother's always playing. And
I remember my Aunt Cindy would watch Grand Theft Auto when we were playing as kids, like in middle school or high school, whenever Grand Theft Auto 3 came out. And most mothers would be appalled. She was dying of laughter.
Really?
She just couldn't get over that. You would just drive over people, shoot people.
Right.
Punch them right in the face. She died of laughter.
And it's also like, truly, what the fuck? Like, for kids? Because
she had the right response.
Totally. It's ridiculous.
Because it is ridiculous. I've never driven a car over people and gotten out and punched somebody.
That you would admit on tape.
Right.
I mean, that's crazy.
It is crazy.
And it's also, what are kids so pent up about that they're the ones being like, yeah, I gotta get out this fucking stress. You know what I mean?
It's just fun to play against the script, I guess.
Totally.
It doesn't mean you have to actually do it, but it's fun to play against it.
It's transgressive also, because you're... I mean, maybe I should start playing it now. I don't know if I want to go down that rabbit hole, though.
Look, I support video games. I think about all the artists that go into it and how much work it is and how difficult it is to make them.
Absolutely.
People still think that it's like Pong. Like, no, they're like cinematic movies. Mm-hmm. Like, they're really great to get lost into.
Absolutely. Gaming is like...
Gaming saved me during the pandemic. I do not know what I would have done if it had not been for gaming. I'd be face down at the Hudson River.
Absolutely. 100%. Instead, you get to do a game where you go face down at the Hudson River. What is Rachel working on these days, do you think?
I don't know. We're going to have to ask her. Right. I feel like she's working on a bunch of stuff. By the way, I'm done with tech. I'm ready to throw my phone into the river.
Yeah?
I just looked at my phone and it's like...
Here's the thing. One thing I've been... because I was getting so wrapped up in, like, because TikTok's just, like, constant, that I started being like, it's just really hard. Once you, like, lose, like, your footing on having boundaries with it, it just gets harder and harder and harder and harder. And then also during the holidays, I found myself, like, I kept, like, sneaky looking at it when I was around family. And then I've been doing a 2-minute mindful meditation when I wake up. And part of the intention for that is I'd be like, please, God, give me control. Please help me not look at my phone compulsively.
Right. Hey, Rachel.
Okay. Did I mention that nothing is off limits?
We're back with Rachel Feinstein.
Do you prefer Feinstein or Feinstein?
Feinstein, but you know what? You could call me Minorowitz.
Done and done.
I don't know how that would look. A happy Hanukkah, by the way, Rachel.
Thank you so much. I'll be wearing only chocolate golden coins over my tetas tonight.
Yes. Wait, is today the first day of Hanukkah?
No, today's second day.
Oh, shit.
Right? Isn't today the second day of Hanukkah?
Yes. I don't know, actually. You guys probably know better.
Yeah, we have
You said you're not lighting the menorah?
I think it's the first. I'm not sure.
On your Wikipedia, it says her father's from a Jewish family, whereas her mother converted to Judaism. Did she do that to get married to your father, I'm guessing?
No, my dad didn't care at all. My mom was just like really into it. My dad, you know, my mom just wants to be, a black Jew. She wants to be everything she isn't.
I get that. I really, I can understand that.
We were talking about, I was talking to Rachel the other night, and we already went over how much we love you and all your accolades and how highly we think of you. But I was so fascinated by your conversations about your family and your mother and your just everything about you kind of fascinates me. And I don't know if it's because, and I mentioned this, and I hope you don't take offense to it, but I get the same thing. Sometimes based off how someone looks without meeting them.
He said you were pretty.
You're very pretty.
You know, I'll take it. Are you kidding?
Sometimes you just like make assumptions like, well, I guess they're going to be this type of comic, and you're not. Like, you're so, you're like such a, like, intrinsically a comedian. You're so funny. You're so likable. You've got amazing stories. And even when you talk just in general, you're doing characters, which I fucking love.
I don't mean to do that, but when I impersonate people in a story, I just go into their voice.
And your body, her body. Like, I'm telling Emma that, like, she was imitating, like, when your mom's really listening to someone tell a story, like, your physical body changes, like, how you...
Because she listens in the most hostile, insane way. She has, like, a thigh up in the air, her toes pointed in the air. She does a very over-listening. It's very aggressive.
Like, she's cued in.
Like, my mom would have a goddamn... field day with the two of you, just wanted to get in there.
Right.
I have a joke about it on stage, but she truly only wanted, she was praying one of us was gay just so she could accept us and celebrate and rock out with us.
How did she talk to you about sex, like when you were growing up?
My mom was more kind of like all about, it was more diversity than like women and sexuality,
really?
You know, but like, as a matter of fact, if I was, she probably would have talked to me a lot more about sex.
Interesting.
But,
so diversity, she was ahead of it, because that didn't become like, I mean, that was like a thing that I remember, you know, that good for her. For my mom was talking about sex with me, but she never brought up diversity when I was little.
My mom, it's all about, yeah, it was all about that. And then she would always say, she would do like a sexuality check-in where she would say,
what?
If any part of you feels like you might be attracted to somebody that is not what typically you would think that society, damn them, tells you you need to be attracted to, you can always let us know.
Where did she get this from?
She says, because let me tell you something, everybody's out there fighting for these rights and I'm not going to be outside of it. I was like, that's a confusing reason to,
right.
Yeah, she just didn't want to be left out of like a march or a parade, and she wanted to be able to be in the parade. She was just crazy.
Were her parents conservative?
Yes, extreme conservative. So her dad, if you had an opinion at the dinner table, you were called a goddamn commie. So,
oh my God.
Yes, you're like, you and your red opinions are, yeah, you were, it's really funny that if a child had an opinion, they were called a communist.
Right.
Incredibly confusing.
The government's controlling this kid. People, the pendulum swings.
But my mom left home when she was 17 and she went to college and majored in African history with a minor in Black studies. And that was, she just wanted to do everything her father wouldn't understand.
Emma and I both laughed at the same time. We both, like, our eyes were widened and then somehow, like, laughed. Not at your mother, but just so unexpected.
Did,
like,
your dad still talk to her, or was he like, I'm disowning her?
He passed away a long time ago, but like many, many years. I don't think I never met
I'm sorry, not your dad. I meant your grandfather. Sorry, my bad.
Yeah, my grandfather. I never met him.
Mm.
But Howie is alive and well. But yeah, her grandfather, I don't know what he thought about her Black studies major in African history. Oh, there's a funny thing about that too, because apparently my mom originally, so her majors switched. So I believe initially it was a Black studies major with a minor in African history. And then apparently this, as my mom would say it, a lovely African-American man took me aside and he said, Karen, that's not your story, that's ours. And
oh my God.
Yeah.
I know. I'm like, I don't think that everybody, I'm not sure that every Black student would have felt this way, but my mom was like
one.
The first guy that got to her and says anything.
Right.
Because if you're any other color than white, my mom believes everything you say and will undermine anything else anyone else says.
Interesting.
You know, so she said, a marvelous man by the name of Jabari, who I, yes, was very aroused by. I did not ask that. He explained to me that my major should be African history because it was really not about me to define the African American story or diaspora.
God knows what she was saying in the class that made it that she was defining it, where he was maybe he just wanted to get her out of his classes.
My mom might have just been like bugging him. She was probably annoying. She always wants to, even now, I think she bothers some of the people she works with. She's always wanted to do diversity outreach. And I don't even know exactly what that means, but she's always on a corner with like a sign.
She's doing a check-in. She wants to check in and see what the diversity situation is.
She has a sign. You guys, I'll send you the picture. My mom has a sign outside on a street corner that says like, ask me about diversity, how we can help. She's always like on. So she was probably doing that to Jabari. And he was like, I need to get this white bitch out of this class. I got to focus. I can't. She was probably just trying to have these long moments with him about racial suffering. And he was like, can you just change your major? And she was like, Jabari, thank you. Thank you.
Rachel has this joke about her mom wearing like Navajo. Like, what does she wear?
She wears long menopausal Navajo capes.
So one time I was in the Phoenix airport and there was those like stores where they sell that kind of stuff. You know, it's two white ladies, right? It's like turquoise rocks, feathers, like varies, you know. And I texted it to Rachel and she texted back, my mom could walk in that store naked and leave with 11 months of wardrobe.
It's true. Sharon doesn't give a fuck. If it's Southwestern, it's on her. And then she'll, and I talk about it on stage, but then she'll be surprised if anybody notices when if she does a whole play. She goes, oh, this is from Sedona, I believe. Oh, I forgot I had it on today. What fun. How marvelous.
How was she at your wedding? Does she like, is she okay if the attention's not on her? Or does she like to call attention to herself?
At the wedding, I didn't actually have my mom speak because I knew it would be just like some sort of call to action.
You silenced
I mean, she
her.
Was like worthless at helping me beforehand. Like, I'd be like, mom, what do I give away at the end of the evening? You know, like you need somebody in your family to take control and make decisions. I'm a comedian. I'm like an animal. I don't know about like how to organize a wedding.
Totally. No, 100%.
Yeah. I'm like, mom, am I supposed to have like a floral display? And she'd be like, celebrate diversity. I'm like, never mind.
What does your mom and your dad think of you doing stand up?
My mom loves it. She calls it my talent show, or my program.
Your program. Gosh.
And not even program, your program.
She says you're a little program. And my father, yeah, they love it. My dad, he loves, you know, the arts. They all love the arts.
He was a blues musician, your dad?
Yes. He plays piano and zydeco accordion. He was a civil rights attorney, so he prosecuted a lot of KKK and stuff like that.
Oh, that's amazing.
Badass.
Yeah, and he prosecuted a lot of KKK. He was, like, in the South a lot trying to reinforce Brown versus education in the early 70s before we were born, because I guess they weren't really reinforcing it in a lot of these places. Like, it was still not.
My mom actually worked on that too. She was a secretary to a judge that was doing that in Boston about desegregating schools, and like she like typed up his notes.
Oh my god, that's so cool! Your mother was a pioneer too. Her and Karen would have got on.
Yeah, because I was like, what was your biggest regret? And she was like, she had it ready to go. She's like, I wish I had stayed working for Judge Doherty instead of just like starting a weaving shop and having kids. And I was like, well, sorry I asked, but. Moving along, because then she got a
no
Swedish.
My mom loves
shop.
To talk about her regrets and her dark year. She's always telling me what didn't work out for her. She did it this year at Thanksgiving. We always go around the circle. She makes everybody say something special about ourselves. Then she wept about Ahmaud Arbery, and then she started talking about her mortality and the choices she made.
Oh boy,
you know, when she was a young up and coming woman. Like, my mom's thing usually lasts like 20 minutes. It's like
Did she not know how to read the room?
Not at all. We all afterwards had to have a meeting about it. We're like, next year she can't do it. She cries every year, sobs.
Oh,
I feel bad.
I do too.
No, but it's too much. It's too much.
Yeah, it is too much. At Thanksgiving, it's like, we're already stressed out enough getting here.
Right. Mm-hmm. And then your husband.
She's like, this damn verdict isn't enough. And I'm like, of course it's not. But Karen, this is Thanksgiving. And let's just.
Oh, her name is actually Karen.
What's that?
Her name is Karen.
Her name is Karen Feinstein. Wow. And she wept on Zoom when she found out what Karen meant.
Oh, no.
She was like, well, apparently my name is part of this whole damn problem.
Rachel and I both did some Zoom shows with Eastville Comedy Club, and there was actually a woman named Karen that used to come to a lot of the she was like be at like every Eastville show I did. And she messaged me. I forgot about this. I don't know. She messaged me and was like, "Can I interview you for something?" I said, "Yes." And then I thought she was interviewing me for a radio program, but she interviewed me about how to set up a microphone on her computer. And it took me about 15 minutes to realize that it wasn't some kind of podcast or something. She was like, "So how do you set it up? What microphone do you use? What kind of computer do you have?" And I was like, "Wait a minute, are we recording this?" And she was like, no, I just need someone to set up my microphone." And that was someone from the Eastville shows. I don't know if she did she contact you at all? She had a radio program about grandmas.
Oh, she did?
Yeah, she actually asked me for your info, and I didn't give her anybody's info because she had her interview with me was about how to set up a microphone. So I was like, in good faith, I can't pass on. I didn't say that to her. I was like, let me check with Rachel. Then I didn't do that because I couldn't, in good faith, connect this woman with anybody because she was trying to figure out asking people like technical questions. So I was trying to not like have her do that to other people.
Oh my God.
I want to ask, I know this is kind of a hacky question, but I actually don't know the answer to this. Rachel, what got you into stand-up? Or like, how did you, like, what was the first sign that you're like, oh, I think I want to do stand-up? And how did you get into it?
I mean, I would have loved to be one of those people that was like about to be a doctor or a lawyer, but I made this like noble decision to leave it all for the arts. But I had like no other skills. I was an absolute like emergency moron in school. Like they did scans. I was always being scanned. I did these EKG scans. It was like even now when I even smell school, I'm just like, fuck, like because it was nonstop. Just like, what in God's name are we going to do with this deep fool?
Do you think you have ADHD or dyslexia or anything?
I do have ADHD, yeah, but too. I was like diagnosed with like they all kinds of different things. My mom was a therapist, so she was always taking me around for scans. And first they thought I had something called figure ground where you couldn't tell the difference between one person speaking and like a group of voices.
What? Damn.
So, as a comic, you'd really need to have that skill honed.
I know. I don't think I have figure ground, but my mom loved to diagnose me. She was just like, she was constantly arguing about me because she was trying to like figure out what, they couldn't stuff information in my brain. And all I wanted to do was just like imitate people and, you know, ignore everything else. My bag was like a bag of just foul debris. Like you couldn't even see in my backpack.
Me too. And then when I got a car, same thing.
Yes. You too? Yeah, my hair was like always wet. It was always dripping down my back. And at school, they used to call me wet back. And my mom was like, they use racial slurs on our daughter. But it was like, my back was actually wet. It was always, which might have been her fault. And that might have been her on her. But my back was, I was always came to school with my hair just kind of in this weird tangled, you know, deep Jew's nest. And it was always dripping.
Did you go to college?
No. There wasn't even a thought of it. And I like, it was just like, I moved to New York when I was 17 with this guy in his band called Dick Sister. And that's
Dick, my God, Rachel, I didn't know about this.
Yeah, I was the Yoko Ono to Dick Sister. Dick Sister was like 5 years older than me, but because he was like interracial, my mom was like on the front lawn with no questions. She was like, sounds fantastic, you know, strong rock or something, and slammed the door.
She was 22 and you're 17. That's a big, those are
I know.
Formative
like,
years.
Everybody's like, didn't your mom? And I'm like, no. I remember my brother being like, mom, like, are you sure this is okay? Like, this isn't good.
Yeah, if the age doesn't get you, maybe the name Dick Sister should be a tip off for like, not the people to follow.
Yes, definitely. Like, it was like, she basically said when we were, but no, I mean, I guess she was just like, you know, whatever you want to do, you know, follow your lights or something. And Gloria Steinem. And
17's a baby.
But when I was a kid, I would imitate people a lot. I remember my mom taking me aside and saying, because I would go to people's houses and I would just speak like them to them. You know, like I had this Southern friend and like she had this cute little kind of clip accent like this. And I would just go, well, y'all, thank you so much for having me here today, because I just had the most delightful time. I really did. And my mom would be like, you know, laugh on the way home. But if I did it to them, I remember her explaining, she'd be like, you can't do it back to them. You got to do it with me and your father.
Right. Behind their back.
Look at them right in the eyes. And it's not okay. You know, so I remember them explaining. Because as soon as I hear a voice, I want to do it.
Oh, you know? I'm the same. Because I'm also an impressions guy. And
you
so,
get it, right?
Yeah. And I my childhood was a lot of me doing impressions for my family. We'd go out in public and we'd see someone we want to make fun of. I know it sounds mean. And then I would do the impressions of them, or I'd do Liza impressions, or I had like that talk boy and I would do like Michael Jackson interviews. Could do all these impressions and stuff. So my uncle Mike, Mateo, do the Jiminy Glick impression. I'm like, I would always do Jiminy Glick at the dinner table, like just constantly impersonating people.
But neither of you guys did acting in school.
I did like one or two plays. It wasn't serious though. I don't
know. When you were in high school, were you active in any kind of performing
Nothing.
Arts way?
Just singing. I was in choir. I liked choir and I had a private tutor that would teach me classical singing. I liked that, but I quit everything because I was so relentlessly made fun of. So that I had started hanging out with a bunch of kids in the city because we were in the suburbs. So I just was like, I'm out, like done. I quit show choir. I quit it all. I was like, I'm not doing any of this.
I did student government, but I made it like a joke. Like it was like I would always like it was like a joke. Like I would always like make it like a comical thing. And I think I played some sports, but I stopped just so I could smoke pot. Did you do sports?
But you're right. Running for office is inherent.
Like, oh, it was ridiculous. I had this friend who had really big boobs and she was super, super popular. So I was like, you run for president and I'll be vice president. And she didn't want to, but I was like, come on, come on, come on, come on. And so then she was president and I was vice president for like 3 years.
Wow. Yep. That's hilarious.
You
would be the loveliest vice president. You would be so much fun.
It was a good time. And I set up this whole like recycling campaign and all these different, and then we would take the recycling. And then the idea was we'd get money and put it towards a school trip. But the recycling place I would take everything to went out of business and we lost all the money. And no one asked me any fucking questions about it. I could have just taken that money. But they were like,
that's because you're at an age where no one's paying attention but you.
Sure. I should have taken the goddamn money. But
you should have taken the goddamn
taken
money.
That $2,000.
Wait, but Rachel, so you moved to New York. You're with the Dick Sisters or whatever.
17, a baby.
17. But how does this turn into stand-up?
Well, so I had a vague idea that I wanted to do something with characters, you know, be on a sketch show. And I loved Tracy Ullman and like I loved Saturday Night Live and all that. When I was very little, when Tracy Ullman was on, I would put on a robe and be like, go home, go home. You know, she used to do that at the end of the show. Mm-hmm. And I loved that. But then, so I had kind of a vague idea of doing something in comedy, but not stand up. I didn't really know that, like, because I'm more of a storyteller, so I didn't really know that my act would translate into, you know, those clean kind of monologue style jokes is what I think I thought stand up was.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I just had a vague idea of doing something in comedy or acting. And I met this woman, and I was working at a store on Broadway called Star Magic, where it's like sells little stickers and fluorescent things and stuff. And like planets and things like that. It was very kind of ethereal store.
And was your idea, like when you got to New York, that you're like, I'll work here and figure it out?
Yes. And there was this furious guy there that would run that store. His name was Shlomo. He would always, when I wasn't moving, he would always go, rot it, rot it, rot it. And he was really angry. And I had this other guy that worked for me who was he would dress in drag and do this incredible show, this drag show that was like amazing. And I just thought he was so hysterical. His name was Kenny Wonder, like Wonder Woman. And he was so funny. And I was like, wow, he does this kind of weird thing that's not like, you know, typical stand up.
Right.
And I was obsessed with him. All he would do was draw horses really fast while we were working and getting screamed at to rotate it. And he could draw the fastest horse. And we would do this hilarious impression together of Nancy Drew. And we would, I don't know if you remember Nancy Drew Mystery.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But we'd always make Nancy like, you know, kind of a godless horse. And I'd be like, she knew then when she walked into the library that she would end up sucking the cock of whoever was there.
And if only like, you guys could have done a podcast.
What's this?
If you only there were podcasts around back then.
I know, it's too bad. He would make me laugh so much. He'd be like, the Bobbsey twins followed the crumbs right onto Nancy, couldn't get enough dick, and it was everything just went back to Nancy and her love of dick. But he was so he made me laugh, and he was so delightful and like free and funny. And I got this idea, I had like such a crush on him. You ever have that? Because he was like my only friend in New York. Mm-hmm. Like I liked him more than he could bear. I think I just followed him around the shop and just watched him draw ponies and make me laugh. he would draw these really funny sexual ponies, but he was an incredible artist and really funny. So he definitely got me interested in it. And then one day this lady came in the shop but I was very depressed. Like I was swimming, rocking in depression because I could barely get it together to even get myself to work. I was always getting fired. I kept that job at Star Magic for a little bit, but I was like very scared of the whole world and didn't think my main goal was just like not to be homeless, like just to remain homeless or something.
I mean, 17 is a scary age and young to be in New York and living with was the relationship a source of strength or was that stressing you out too?
No, he was wonderful. He excited me, but I was living with Dick's sister and Dick's sister was, he was always dumping me and did a lot of blow. And Dick's sister was, I didn't have the most pleasant home life because Dick's sister wanted me out. They were having fun. And I was like cock blocking their good time. They were just like, why do you have to move this broad into the epicenter of Dick's sister? We're about to be famous. And so this woman came into the shop one day. She was an actress. She was playing Rizzo on Grease.
Cool.
And we started talking and I was helping her find some crystal for her co-star. And I said, you know, I think she asked me a question. I was like, oh, I think I might want to do, you know, something with comedy or acting or something. And she said, oh, you've got to go see my coach. Her name is Florence Winston, but she's by the book. She's like, you know, she's very strict and she'll make you read all the classics. And she said she's up on Riverside Drive and she taught Marlon Brando and she's incredible. So she's very old and she's amazing. So I went up and I met with Florence Winston and I had these private, and she was like, I had these private classes, but she was like my college because she would make me read all the plays. She was very strict. I had to be on time. And she would go, and she used to say, you must make brave choices when you do comedy as well as drama. You cannot be vulgar. You cannot be vulgar. And I would do an impression. She would go, no, there's a vulgarity to it. Try again.
Was she training you for acting in her mind or for comedy or for stand-up? Or was it just like general entertainment?
It was just more theater. But I explained that I was interested in comedy. And so she would say, well, you do have an ear. But just make sure you cannot caricaturize a person with the nastiness swimming beneath. So you try it out and I'll tell you whether it's vulgar. And then I would try it at a... do it with such fear, so it always ended up sounding vulgar. So now, vulgar, try again. And then she had this big hat, like a velvet cap, and it covered one eye. And I remember I would do these little impressions and ideas for her before we would read the classics. And I remember one day she kind of looked up from her bowler hat that she wore, and she go, that was actually very marvelous. It was a truthful interpretation, and there was no vulgarity.
Oh, I like her.
Did she suggest you do an open mic, or what was your first open mic like?
She definitely did not know anything about stand-up, but I would perform with the other people in the Winston troupe in this little theaters, and I would play, like, I gravitated more towards, like, the nurse character in Romeo and Juliet and stuff like that. I would just play the more affected people. But she made me read all the classics. She said, you must read Chekhov before you go about in this other side of the business. There's a darkness to it. And you must reject the vulgarity of the business. She had very strict rules. She'd be like, when I wanted to do a part, I would write a letter to the director. And that's what you do. You can write a letter. I reject the agents. I reject you. She would always reject them.
Wow.
I reject the agents. I reject the managers and all the money around what is truly a very pure art form. So if you would like a part, you could write a letter to the director and wear a very long skirt and deliver it.
But so also did she want you to pay her?
I mean, yes, she charged for the lessons, but not very much. It was like 2 hours and we play a piece of jazz and then we would, you know, read a play. And it was very peaceful. She taught me how to kind of like slow down a little bit. But she was very, I mean, obviously, God knows what she would think about anything I was doing now. She probably would still think I'm a godless whore. But
you don't talk to her anymore?
No, she passed away. But I mean, I knew her for years. I visited her in the hospital because she was definitely like my first New York mother. She was the reason I didn't leave, actually, her and my dad. Mm-hmm. My father told me not to stay because I was going to go home because I was so lonely and Dick's sister kept dumping me. And Florence also was like, you must stay. She says, there's a vulgarity to a life in the suburbs for you. It's vulgar. And there's a vulgarity. I reject it. Said, you must stay here and be brave because life has very lonely moments in it. And perhaps this is your lonely moment, but you should stay, and it would be vulgar if you left. So I did. I stayed.
I found that really kind of warmed my heart. Sure. Yeah, she really cared about you.
No, she really did. She was an amazing New York character, and I needed her desperately because she basically explained to me, because whenever she would give me notes when I would do a piece or something like that, or I do a monologue, she used to give me notes and I would just shrivel up, you know, and I would just not really try. And she was like, something foul happened to you in your childhood at school. It damaged you. You have to free yourself of that because you cannot take a note. You must be able to take a note, but you freeze because you feel rejected, which is vulgar. So she was correct. And so she taught me how to kind of take in criticism and like a sort of slow down. And she would say, you know, you're a little strange, but you're not, there's nothing wrong there. You're just a bit strange, but it's good, I believe, this sort of strangeness that you have.
Can I say though, Rachel, this woman really is amazing in the sense that what we're hearing right now is your childhood is everyone around you is telling you something's wrong with you, something's wrong with you, something's wrong with you, something's wrong with you. And then you meet this woman. And in such a short amount of time has affected your life in such a positive way and was like, you're not, there's nothing wrong with you. All these things can serve you. Like it's kind of like emotional to listen to this. I know you're being funny, but it is a little emotional to listen to this story.
No, I feel that way about her. She was I desperately needed her. And she had very good, look, she might not have understood stand-up and she would say that many things were crass or whatever, but she had a very good heart and her general approach, like it doesn't mean we're not going to ever have an agent or whatever, but her general approach, she had a purity to her and she was a deeply good, you know, person. And she stood for, you know, a certain truthfulness and a slower, more mindful way of living. I remember she used to always talk to me about certain like ugliness that I should try to avoid, you know, and she would say, like, I remember when I started to date, she would be like, all men care about is the crotch, which, of course, is hilarious. But she would say they're like little cats. They meow to get in and they meow to get back out again as soon as they're finished with your crotch. But she would because I was very prude. And she would be like, because I would get attached if I hooked up with people. And she was like, your heart would not be able to bear it. You must know that about yourself. And I believe men, you know, you give them time. Otherwise, they'll just meow for the crotch and leave. She says, now there's no music to a relationship. I remember my husband used to walk me all the way home and then walk back to his home again. And then he would give me a call on the telephone and say, could I walk you home again? That's how romantic it was. And do you think he'd taken one whiff of my crotch? No, I kept him far away from
him. What was the final straw with Dick's sister? Did you have to leave or did they boot you?
Actually, Dick's sister dumped me for the final time. And then I used to go back home on the weekends because I still really didn't have friends besides Kenny Wonder. And I was he had so many friends. He was like a New York character. So I couldn't really, I had to like go home and get my other friend refills or whatever. And so I used to go home on the, it was the opposite. Once Dick's sister dumped me, I went back home during the week and I would come up to New York on the weekends to train with Florence. And I would rent a room for like 3 days a week. And I got a job in DC teaching at a school. So during that, and I was trying to find another place to live. And during one of my bus trips, I was weeping about Dick's sister. And this like lovely Bengali woman was sitting next to me. And she was like, you know, never cry for the man. She had similar thoughts as Florence. She was like, never cry for the man. She was like, don't cry. You don't remove any tears for a man. She said, just please, you can come live with me. She said, we'll have a good life. I remember she said, we'll take snacks in the morning. We'll take yoga. She always said, we'll take marmalade. We'll have a beautiful life. Just take marmalade toast in the morning and yoga. Nice, peaceful life away from the men's. And I moved in with her.
Oh my God, Rachel, this is such a fascinating story.
Yeah, I was like, fuck yeah, I want to take marmalade.
Sure.
Yes. And I lived with the Bengali family for like 2 years. And that was my family. My mom, of course, loved it. She had no questions. She was like, Bengali lady on a Greyhound. Fantastic.
Sounds absolutely legit.
Give her my credit card. Or whatever. Right.
Did you? Yeah.
That was it. I moved right in with her.
Wow. Because also the bus ride going from D.C. to New York every weekend. I mean, that's commitment.
But also just the fact that your mom's like, a Bengali woman on a bus ride.
She's like, fantastic.
Here's my credit card.
Like, so her last name is, she's like, don't need it.
Yeah, whatever.
Get in there while you can.
Say no more.
Yes. She was like, this is a beautiful story. Absolutely marvelous. Do it. I'm like, so their address, not necessary.
Was there marmalade involved, or did she like put you to work for her? Was there any weirdness?
No, she was lovely. She I moved in with her and her whole family.
Wow.
And we did take marmalade in the morning. We took marmalade and we took toast, and I lived with them, and we had a pretty good life. I remember she was always like, she was in a very unhappy marriage, and she was a little, you know, dramatic. So she would come into my room with her daughter, who I was also friends with. And the mom, she would come in and she would go, Rachel, please, my heart aches. I've married the wrong man. I'm an artist in my soul. And I've married the wrong man. He's like toilet person. It's like he plays in the toilet, Rachel. And I was like, what do you mean? She's like, he plays games in the toilet. What kind of garbage person would play a game in the toilet? But she was right. He did play toilet games.
Like, and what?
I don't know what he did, but he was always in there splashing. I could always hear splashes.
But not in the
and
tub.
I'm like, what is he doing? And she's like, it's a toilet game, some sort of toilet rubbish game. She's like,
he's probably just washing his face.
To this day, I want to know what he was doing in that toilet, but he was always splashing around. He was a nice man. He's just a little fatigued.
Sure.
And he was always in there smoking and splashing.
Hmm.
And she's like, and I'm like, but what is the game? What toilet-based game would he possibly play? What are the rules?
Right.
And she's like, I don't know, Rachel, but it's not for me. This toilet game, rubbish life. I want to be an artist. So anyway, so she was in an arranged marriage. She was married to this man who was splashing and playing toilet games. And she longed for her old life. She was actually a very famous singer in Bangladesh.
Wow.
And so she had like a hit single when she was young. And so she would play her single. We played music. So she also encouraged me. She's like, travel with the arts. I couldn't do it. And she would come in my room and smoke out the window at night and tell me about the artistic man that she longed for or whatever. And whenever she would smoke, she would go, Rachel, please never tell my daughter that I take cigarettes. In my country, it's like a terrible, terrible slut if you take a cigarette. Please don't tell her. Please never tell. And then, so we would chat and smoke. I'm like, don't worry about it. It's not a problem. And then the daughter would come in a few minutes later and smoke out the window and be like, just remember, never tell my mom I smoke here.
Right.
Because like in my country, you're like, seriously, it's like right now you're considered like a terrible, terrible whore if you smoke. So they both were smoking out my window.
Rachel, how do you not have a book?
I do want to write it, but I'll.
Did you stay in touch with either of them?
Yes, I stay. I'll text you her Facebook. She finally moved to India, and she's like a full time artist now.
Oh, good.
She divorced her husband, and she's living. She wanted to get her kids married first, so you know, and so she got them married, and she's living there, and she's always applauding me and writing to me. She's like, Rachel, you did it. Like, you're a true artist in the truest degree. And I
love her.
She was so wonderful. And then she would cook for me every morning. We would have like family, you know, and those were my brother and sister, Asif and Uzma. And I did meet like an older Bengali man who would take me to dinner. And I think some people wanted me to marry him.
Sure.
And it got a little dicey. But that had nothing to do with her. But yeah, we would go see movies. And then at the end, he's kind of like, what's next? So I'm like, well, you're 47 and I should probably get out of here.
And I'm not over Dick Sisters. Yeah. So.
And I'm not over Dick Sister. But I did. And I think I was a gold digger at that point. I used it for those movies, you know, like I wanted to go to the movies. So I went with Mamoon and we would sit in the movie together. And then afterwards, I would just try to flee. But I was a gold digger. I played my part in that.
I have to say, Rachel, before we go, I'm telling you, you have to write like a David Sedaris. I know that's such a hacky thing to say, but like you could easily write a book about your life. It's fascinating. I didn't know any of this about you.
Yeah, I always had weird living situations. After that, I lived with a lady like in a punk band called Mongrel Bitch, and the three of us were in like little bunk beds together. So I've always kind of curled myself to different, like it was me, her, and her daughter, Mongrel Bitch's lead singer and her little daughter, and we all shared a bunk bed.
Wow.
But I've always done that, just kind of met people in a bus or a corner store and immediately moved in with them.
All right, Rachel, you have to write a book. Wouldn't you read that, Emma?
Yeah, I mean, it's like so a one-person show about the different people you've lived with, and you never got chopped up into little bits or anything like that.
It is truly fascinating that I wasn't murdered, but I always found like, you know, families that I would just kind of like take me in. The families were good. Then I found like a series of like wild emergency alcoholics. That wasn't right. as fun. And I would right. flee in trash bags, just always flee in some sort of guttural alcoholic.
But you didn't consider leaving New York?
But yeah, I mean, it was, I'm still really close with her. I'll send you guys a picture. And I have been starting to write like essays, and I've been meaning to get back to the book. So now you're given the proper nudge to do so.
Oh my God, this is, I'm like blown away. I'm
also
fascinated.
Writing a book is such a good thing to do right now, I think, because it's like social media. I feel like the pendulum always swings on content. And right now everything is like such quick, rapid fire interactions that people are going to start craving. Like, I think books are going to be big again.
Yeah.
Sometimes like,
yes, I
it's like,
right.
cause it happens with TV. Like I remember with like reality shows, and then all of a sudden the pendulum swung and there was like all this, like the best scripted TV I think we've ever had.
Yeah. Walking Dead.
Right. So now it's like
Game of Thrones,
social
and
media, extra amount of trash, and I think it's going to swing back the books. That's what, that's my prediction.
Well, Rachel,
no, I think you're right. I'm going to keep getting back to it. Thank you for saying that. Maybe soon we can all go and take marmalade and toast together.
I'd love to
love
it. Marmalade
it's and a toast. Good way to start a morning. You take
it
marmalade
is.
And take some toast.
Rachel,
I
you could even
both.
Do like Metropolitan Lifestyle, like the Fran Lebowitz book, where it's a series of essays, and it could just be my life in other people, my life in other people's families or whatever. I mean, it's so
that's
funny.
That's a good way to put it. My life in it. Other people's homes. Yeah, that's a good. I was thinking of calling it Stranger Everywhere, but I kind of like that idea because I would just go into these different, because it was what my mom taught me to do, is just to like infiltrate different, like I was living out her dream, which
right.
was just to live with a series of diverse families for the rest of her life.
Well, Rachel, I love you so much. Thank you for coming on.
Where can people find you?
Rachel-Feinstein.com. My Instagram is Rachel_Feinstein, and that's where I post a lot of my dates and stuff like that. Thank you guys so much.
Hell
this
yeah,
was
of
so
course.
Fun.
No,
wait, I have a quick question.
It's coming out.
It's coming out, I think, in 1 month.
Okay, awesome. So yeah, all my dates will be on there. Thank you. I had the
I have
best
a quick
time
question.
With you guys.
Did
yeah.
someone else take Rachel-Feinstein.com?
Yes, there is a sculptor that has my same
motherfucker.
Name, and I'm always getting confused with her and offered
yeah.
things and then softly unoffered them. Like they asked me if I wanted to be like on Vogue, something most
oh,
fashionable
fuck.
Woman of the year. And I was like, yes, of course. And then my agent called back and she's like, ooh, that's the other Rachel Feinstein. Sorry. So like I literally was walking around with Vogue fashion choices of their confidence, and then they softly uninvited me.
Right.
It was like spotlight fashion or something. And then they asked me, they invited me to an evening at Oprah. They're like, Oprah wants to meet you.
Oh
I
God.
Went around with Oprah is intrigued by me confidence. That'll change the way you walk.
Wow.
And then my agent
Damn.
Called me back and they were like, oops, it's the other Rachel Feinstein. Actually.
That is cruel
oh my
and unusual.
God,
well, you know what? Maybe she's gotten some offers she wants to. You know what I'm saying? Like,
I actually, Irene is friends with her and we've met each other and she's very lovely. We talked because she's probably getting invited
exactly.
to like the most disgusting, abhorrent
right.
things.
Right.
She's like, her best friend's like Mick Jagger. She has this very fancy New York lovely life and she's an incredible artist. And she's probably getting invited to like, I don't know, the fucking
joke
you
shack.
Know, Laugh Shack
right.
in Des Moines.
Right.
And but she was really sweet. I met her at Irene's wedding for the first time, but we're friends now.
That's,
oh, that's
awesome.
Great. Well, Rachel, we love you very much. Yes, thank you so much for coming on the show.
I love you guys so much. I'll see you later on. Maybe
see
maybe it's a this week. Bye,
yes.
you guys.
Totally. Bye. Oh my God, how fucking fascinating.
So interesting. Thank you guys, as always, for tuning in. Definitely check out Rachel-Feinstein.com.
Yes.
I'm at Emma Willman, and I am Emma Willman on TikTok.
And I am Mateo Lane on Instagram, and we love you all, and thank you so much for listening, everyone. Bye-bye.
Star Fans Audio, a podcast network.